This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
That you control, and 603-283-6160 is the number you can call to get in on the conversation with us, 603-283-6160. And with you in the studio tonight, it's me, Bonnie,
Joa, and Jay.
And I'd like to thank Timothy Fanning, who is an amplifier with us. That means that they went to amps.freetalklive.com and became a supporter of ours, because AMP stands for Amplify Markets, Promote and Support. And they're giving us at least $5 a month being a silver level amplifier and helping promote the show. So thank you so much, Timothy Fanning. And if you would like to learn more, you can go to amps.freetalklive.com to become an amplifier, and you'll get some perks and benefits for going through with that. amps.freetalklive.com. We do have Tim still on the phone. Tim, you had more for us. What was on your mind, Tim?
Yeah, so yesterday I called about this Auschwitz survivor who had made a comment on the behavior of the state of Israel, and I didn't know his name, and I think someone there tried to look it up. Maybe Nikki tried to look it up. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
His name is actually changed. Originally, he was born Hans Joachim Gustav Meyer, born August 12, 1924. At some point, he changed his name, and I do not know how to pronounce what he changed his name to, because it's spelled H-A-J-O. If it was a Spanish name, I'd say hey-ho there. Yeah. So the quote that I actually found, the quote, and he actually passed away in 2014. This was a quote from 2010. He wrote an article in the Huffington Post, May 25, 2010, called An Ethical Tradition Betrayed. And he writes, "I cannot help but hear echoes of the Nazi mythos of blood and soil and the rhetoric of settler fundamentalism, which claims a sacred right to all the lands of biblical Judea and Samaria, the various forms of collective punishment visited upon the Palestinian people, coerced ghettoization behind a security wall, the bulldozing of homes and destruction of fields, the bombing of schools, mosques, and government buildings, an economic blockade that deprives people of water, food, medicine, education, and the basic necessities for dignified survival, forced me to recall the deprivations and humiliations that I experienced in my youth." And he actually was born in Germany, but then he was sent by his parents to the Netherlands, and he wrote a book in Dutch called, I can't pronounce it in Dutch, I could try, but there's an English translation on Amazon Prime. It's called The End of Judaism.
Interesting. Well, that's, like, really interesting. Maybe it's not about today's conflict exactly, but he was saying back in 2010 that Israel is acting to the people who live in Gaza just like Germany was acting to the Jews back when he was a kid.
He certainly was underestimating he was describing what they were doing at the time, and he, like, was calling for that stuff to stop. But what's happening now is just atrocious. Israel, I mean, I don't think we can really even express how horrible it is right there, over there right now. Israel is just completely demolishing Gaza. Like, I'm talking every single standing building is being destroyed. It is
disgusting.
They're
going to get rid of 100%.
That's my prediction. Yeah, that is absolutely.
They will get rid of 100%.
That's crazy. And it's just like, how does 1,000 people dying justify a complete genocide of 100% of people live in Gaza? That's crazy.
Yeah, and actually about the 1,400 number, there's an article in the Gray Zone, and I'm not going to read the whole thing to you. Anybody can go there and look, but there's an article in thegrayzone.com. I don't know if I have it up right now, but it's basically about how after the initial attack, you know, people in the concert were armed because there were Israeli settlers there, and we know what some of them do, and they had guns, and you had IDF members there with guns, and of course they responded. You know, they got it. They went there to kidnap Hamas. Their directive was not to kill anyone, even though they did. They did kill people, but their directive was to capture. But of course, you know, when you go to kidnap people that are armed, they're going to fight back. And then you're armed, and there's a firefight, and then they sent in, I guess, fighter jets and just started bombing according to what's called the Hannibal Directive. But look that one up.
The Hannibal?
Yeah.
Yep. If a hostage is taken, you kill the captor and the hostage.
Do you eat them, too?
The hostage
too?
That, no.
It's Hannibal.
But,
okay.
So I think a good number... This is my opinion. I can't prove it, but based on testimony from people that were there, testimony from people in the IDF, which is in that article on the Gray Zone, that a lot of these Israeli houses were actually, they were bombed by Israeli forces in order to kill the Hamas militants, but that was the prime objective. So
there was a lot of collateral damage because they were bombing, you know, essentially this Shabbat in Israel, where that had been because there was
that's if it's an accident, but it's not an accident. You can't call it collateral damage if it's done on purpose.
I guess that's true.
Yep.
But that's what they'll call it, you know. That's really interesting you brought that up. So right here at the top of freedomsphoenix.com, the headline is, they knew, participated. Photographers working for AP, CNN, New York Times, Reuters were embedded. Photographers were working for the APA, CNN, New York Times, and Reuters were embedded with Hamas on October 7th and accompanied the terrorist group into Israel. They knew the attack was coming and participated in accordance with an exclusive report at Honest Reporting. And this is a news article from the Geller Report, but it's right at freedomsphoenix.com. It's like in a top couple. And that makes sense, because even like when they were trying to say that Assad in Syria was gassing his own people, they had like news crews and crisis actors all set up there, and there was like, you know, pictures and some videos of like all these bodies on the ground. And then you see there was a feed that somebody had of this where it was like, all right, everybody, you can get back up now, and we're going to, you know,
yeah,
people just started getting up.
Jay, have you seen the pictures, though? They're like Pulitzer Prize award-winning photos.
Probably green screens involved and studios.
I'm being
sarcastic.
They really was in Syria, and that was so crazy.
And so that's
a similar
thing.
I think some of the pictures that they're taking now in Israel, like where people are suddenly cowering down in the city, and it's supposedly coverage, like, oh, there's a Hamas rocket that just went off nearby, and then they have a photograph of them. How did they catch that so quickly? And there's a bunch of examples like that. I can't
for
remember
real.
And these are just the ones that I noticed today, because I got a Reuters account, and I got onto AP News, and I'm getting into this. You know,
it's quite the propaganda machine going on out there. You know, they got to make sure that the images are just right. You know that they're, you know, combing these pictures with the fine comb, whatever.
I'm not saying they didn't kill anyone. I'm not saying that because I know, you know, I don't know because I wasn't there, right? But I'm not saying that the initial attack wasn't real. I believe it was real.
Well,
you could say Israel.
Either way, it's definitely...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Thank you for the call, Tim. It's definitely important to always question things if you weren't there to witness it. And I feel the same way about the Russian conflict and the Israeli one. You shouldn't just assume that because they said it on the news, it's true. But moving on, we have another caller. We have Rob from Vermont. Rob, what's on your mind?
Yeah, so I wanted to share a story about when I went into the system. This was like over 20 years ago. You know, after being in there for about a year, the state created a law where, you know, if you have children that are out there, that child support would be building up while you're behind the, you know, the prison walls. And you know, if you wanted to, you know, you could petition the courts and then get that to stop, which is, you know, what I did. Took me a couple of years, but I couldn't get out of not paying what had occurred. So by the time I got out, I was, you know, in the hole $8,000-$9,000 after I maxed out of the prison. And when I got out, you know, the only thing I knew what to do was to go back to work and get a place to live and find a job, which is what I did. And I, you know, paid my child support, and then I also paid an extra $15 a week so I could get caught up with the, you know, back child support. Well, fast forward 4 years after all of this, I learned that the child support money that I was paying in was not going to my children.
Nope.
And I didn't know this. And boy, if I got behind on child support or if I missed a payment, I mean, they were right there on you.
Where was the money going? Did you ever figure that out?
It was. They said that it was going into an account that does not draw any interest, is what I was told.
But who was able to access that money?
I don't know. That's the thing, because, you know, when I learned about that the money was not going to where it was supposed to have been going, I contacted the, you know, the child support office, and they said, oh, I don't know, we don't know nothing about it. Just keep paying.
Well, yeah, this is not unheard of. This is not unusual. I've heard this happen to a lot of people.
And so what I did was I contacted the Attorney General's office, and I told them, you know, I says, I want some answers, okay? I want to know where that money's going. I says, if not, come the next day, I'm going right to the press. And before the end of the day, somebody had contacted me, and they, you know, learned that the money wasn't going out, and I said, I want a complete audit of what I've paid in. You know, and I got the audit, but I says, well, how much interest did this occur on all this money? And they said, well, it was in an account that doesn't have interest paid into it. It just didn't make any sense to me.
That's weird, but also I'm just confused about, like, so once you got the audit, it didn't explain to you, like, who the money was going to. It's just sitting in the account, untouchable. No one gets to use it. Or was it going to the pension of the DCYF people? It wasn't going to the kid it was supposed to go to.
So it wasn't your ex wasn't getting it. Like, you know, generally that's what I think would happen. You know, whoever has custody of the kids is, you know, getting this payment.
Right.
Exactly. And I was not on talking terms with my ex-wife at that time after I had got out of the system. But when I learned that she wasn't getting the money, I mean, I was just beside myself. I went homeless trying to straighten this out, because I told him, I said, no, underneath no certain terms was I going to go back to work until you straighten this out.
Hmm.
You know, and like I said, I ended up in the shelter because, you know, because I just wasn't going to give him any more money.
Yeah, there's a lot of men out there, and I've known several of them who, one guy I know in particular, you know, the ex-wife had four kids. And only one of the four kids was his, the second kid. And she was kind of politically connected. And this guy was managing a gas station on a salary. This was like 1998. He's paying child support on four kids, so they took the max, which was like 28% of his check. And so he's working like 60 hours a week managing a gas station, and he's, you know, literally bringing home like $130 a week after taxes and child support.
Whoa.
It's like $130 a week, and the reason I know this is my, you know, who was a relative of mine, had given this guy basically a room in his house, sort of free of charge. I mean, the guy just basically, the guys had to do a little maintenance around there, but he couldn't afford anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, he literally had like $120 a week to his name, you know, and he worked like 60 hours a week. It was basically like, didn't even.
Slavery.
Yeah, and he would actually, like, I remember he would, like, you know, come work for, like, my dad, like, you know, whatever hours he had for cash. Like, the guy literally had enough money to, like, pay his car, you, like, pay for the gas and maybe his car insurance, and that was it, you know, from his job. Because his ex-wife was getting, you know, a massive amount of the,
So he was paying for not only his kid, but the other kids, too?
Yep.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, anything else you wanted to add, Rob?
Yeah, I would just like to know, how do I get, Joel, I would like you to follow me on Telegram.
Okay.
So I can reach out to talk to you. Is that okay?
Yeah. How can I find you?
I can get you guys in, touch off the air just because I have Rob on Telegram, actually. So thank you for the call.
Yeah.
Bye, Rob. Take care.
Yeah, there's so much crazy stuff that goes on with family courts. They're not even as, good as regular criminal courts?
Well, they're not courts of law. They're not courts of record. What they are is they are for-profit institutions, mm-hmm. quite literally. And this family law committee, maybe we could put a link to that in the show notes. It's kind of boring, but at about 36 minutes, they start talking about how these judges are just denying evidence left and right.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, you know, who's a state legislator, I forget his name.
In
New Hampshire, yep. This was like from a few days ago, November 9th,
mm-hmm.
This committee happened. And the state legislature, this guy who's a chair of this committee, he's reading off this report on how there's like all these judges have been, you know, reported by, you know, people for denying evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and a lot of the evidence is like very extreme. And they sort of get into, it's very clear that, like, the other part, you know, the court should rule the other way. And one of the things they talked about, they didn't really talk exactly about what I'm going to say, but they were talking about how generally the court rules in favor of, for child support, of who is not the breadwinner.
Hmm.
Because they want whoever makes the money to pay the child support, because they can pay the child support, and like most of the time that is the man. And they didn't say in this committee, but I'm actually going to email this committee chair and be like, hey, are you aware that child support awards, a percentage of them goes into the judicial pension fund? Please look into this. This needs to be part of your investigation. In fact, I wrote that down on a note card today, so when I get home tonight, hopefully I'll actually email the guy that. And anyways, they want to introduce legislation to make it so that these family court judges, and they shouldn't even be called judges because they're not really judges, but these family court, you know, actors that are, you know, on these benches that rubber stamp everything, basically, that is brought forward to them by the state, who collect from the judicial pension fund, are denying evidence. Absolutely. I mean, you know, I don't know how much evidence got thrown out of Ian's case, for example, or the jury wasn't allowed to look at, or they wouldn't take into consideration.
Yeah.
What they're trying to do is make a law or statute and operating procedure basically for these family courts, which is kind of controlled by the legislature, but you're going to find it's really controlled by a bunch of lawyers, not the actual legislature, because it's just a money laundering scheme, like mm-hmm. like all of it, for these pensions, to keep them afloat. But the so in family court, like more than about half of the court cases, both sides do not have lawyers. So it's usually a husband and a wife getting divorced, or child support, you know, custody kind of things. And most of the time, neither side has a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they want to do is, if someone is in court without a lawyer, they are what they call pro se, or sui juris is what I like to say. They object to evidence not being entered or evidence being entered. And the judge either approves the objection or denies the objection or allows the evidence, no matter what, the judge needs to make a note of why they either rejected or didn't allow the evidence,
right,
or why they allowed the evidence. So there was some counter in this committee, someone who is, you know, in favor of the judges basically running over people, what yeah. I can tell, who I forget her name, but she says, well, you know, the circuit courts are understaffed and, you know, the family courts are understaffed.
Oh, yeah, that's a good reason to railroad people.
Yeah, right. And, or just, so, like, not have the truth be right. the most important thing in the court of law. So or it's not a court of
well,
law.
Well, that yeah. sounds expensive for our pockets.
Sounds like more work.
So well, it's going to be more work. And so she says, and sometimes you can have, like, a 20-minute hearing, and there's 30-some-odd pieces of evidence that are introduced into the hearing. And you know, so the committee guy's like, and? So you're saying somebody's rights should be denied?
Well, we can't have fair and honest court systems.
Yeah, we can't have court going on longer than the judge wants it to go on.
The New Hampshire legislature is getting actually kind of bombarded with affidavits from regular people who are very, very upset with the way that family court's operating, the way DCYF is operating. You know, they're wasting money, constantly wasting money. They are, you know, they cost a ton of money. DCYF has paid out hundreds of millions of dollars in settlements in the past decade. More like one state representative told me, he's doing some investigation into this on his own, he told me the number is more like $300 million in the past decade.
And it doesn't come from DCYF, it comes from the taxpayers.
Right.
A lot of people that work for DCYF don't even have kids themselves, and there's a reason for that.
Right.
Right.
And, you know, the state legislator, people can't defend themselves and their kids, right? Because they can't get down there. They have kids.
So like... You know, for example, J.R. Hull, who's didn't even want to be a state representative again, but they sort of forced him to be a state representative again because he was, you know, kind of trying to retire from that. He wants to pay attention to his family. They came after him over him giving his kids ivermectin like 2 years ago, and that case cost him over $50,000.
Well, to defend himself
in legal fees. With the two different, so he had to hire a lawyer for his kid,
mm-hmm.
and he had to hire a lawyer for himself.
Wow!
And it was just constant, like just back and forth, paperwork, 50 G's, it cost him. Like, and his like tax returns for that year were like, he was telling me were like, you know, 60% of that $50,000. You know, he didn't make a lot of money. But that's crazy, you know, and a lot of people just can't afford an attorney, and these guys know it, and they just run them right over.
Well, I'm going to go to the phones, and you guys' thoughts. Chuck in Washington, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
Well, forgive me for not being on the topic of family stuff, but, you know, it occurred to me a couple days ago that this show is really, really awesome when you guys take calls, and all shows do that. You know, some shows don't do that, but I just enjoy the experience of having the opportunity and listening to calls from all over the place.
Oh, yeah. We can keep you on if you have more to say, Chuck, but we always try to take calls. It's just a lot of times people don't call in, so 603-283-6160 if you want to call in. Bring up whatever's on your mind. 603-283-6160.
That's what makes the show, right?
Right. It's Free Talk Live.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
USA News Update. Taking to the social media platform X today, West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin announced he will not be running for re-election in 2024.
What I will be doing is traveling the country and speaking out to see if there is an interest in creating a movement to mobilize the middle and bring Americans together.
This almost certainly guarantees Republicans a Senate seat in the deeply red state. GOP Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene is introducing a resolution to initiate the impeachment of the Secretary of Department of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas. Greene alleges that Mayorkas has committed high crimes and misdemeanors pertaining to the U.S. southern border. A new study from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development found that binge drinking around the world is very popular. The country that does it the most is Denmark, followed by Romania, and then Britain. Dave Collins, USA News.
Let me tell you a story about Bill. Bill was a normal guy in his 50s. He had back surgery about 2 years ago. Bill was in a lot of pain. He dealt with his pain by taking the Percocets his doctor prescribed for him. Bill took more and more and more of them to help with the pain, until one day the prescriptions weren't enough to get rid of Bill's pain. Then one day Bill found someone to help him get rid of the pain with illegal drugs he didn't need a prescription for. Fast forward to today. Bill lost his job and his family. The only thing he does have is his drug dealer. If you know Bill's story and you don't want to end up like Bill, call the Detox and Treatment Helpline right now to get away and get treatment. 800-296-1327. 800-296-1327. 800-296-1327. Call right now. Help is standing by. 800-296-1327.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, formerly Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, Air National Guard and Reservist. I'm looking for veterans, active duty military personnel to join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. She needs your skills, courage, and loyalty more than ever. Contact GCNteam.com. Because of the financial and healthcare collapse, veterans are currently struggling finding jobs. Frustrated looking for a job? Change your tactics. Join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. Start a healthcare business with FDI Longevity 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCNteam.com. Immediately. We're looking for military specialists who can use a computer and communicate information and execute a battle plan. Join the admirals, Navy SEALs, Marines, pilots, Army officers, military police, sheriffs, police officers, firemen, and first responders already enrolled in the 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCNteam.com now. FDI Longevity will help you apply your military skills to the task of saving America through health and financial programs. Contact GCNteam.com. Enlist in GCNteam.com and save America.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
Is the phone number for you to call. 603-283-6160. You can bring up whatever's on your mind. It doesn't matter if it's on topic. 603-283-6160. And in the studio with you tonight, it's me, Bonnie,
Joa, and Jay.
And we were talking about lots of different subjects tonight. We're talking about the conflict in Israel and the conflict in Ukraine. And we were talking about DCYF here in New Hampshire, which is Child Protective Services for New Hampshire, you know, another pyramid scheme, basically. But moving on, we have a story here from Coindesk.com that I've had for a while now, but I wanted to get into it, that says the U.S. Treasury seeks to name crypto mixers as money laundering concern. So it says, under pressure to address reports that Hamas and other terrorist groups are partially funded with crypto, Treasury's FinCEN proposed a rule to categorize mixers as a threat. So do you guys know what crypto mixers are?
I do. Is that where you take crypto and you run it through this mixer and it gives you back the crypto, the same amount, except you've rehashed it, like the code or like the reference is different.
So it makes it not traceable.
So let's say that we each have $21 bills, and yeah. we take them all and we throw them in the middle of the table and mix them all up, and then we each take $21 bills back.
Right. That's what this doing.
Yep.
Yep. So I think that this is pretty bad that FinCEN and the Treasury want to do this, or the U.S. Treasury's FinCEN, I guess they belong to them, want to do this. They're proposing this rule because it's just stupid. Anytime someone wants privacy, it doesn't mean that they are a terrorist.
Well, they're freaking out because the velocity of money has really dropped. So what's happening is people are borrowing money, you know, outside the fiat Federal Reserve system. And one of the ways to borrow money is crypto. So there's all of these, like, platforms where you can put your crypto, like PancakeSwap is one of them. I had a friend used to talk about that. But, you know, so with 8% interest rates, essentially, or the interest rates going up, the people who have crypto to put into these swapping type platforms, they can do it anonymously. You can do it like turn your Bitcoin, for example, into like something else like Monero or, you know, some other privacy coin, put it on these exchanges. And then you get paid a pretty, like, hefty APY, annual percentage rate or whatever. And a lot of people are able to do that. In fact, I know of several people who have put up their cryptocurrency to, like, buy houses.
Mm-hmm.
And then they pay it off and they get their crypto back, you know, and cars and, you know, all kinds of other things instead of going through, like,
a bank.
Regular bank.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happening is the velocity of money, the way I understand it, I'm no financial expert, but what I understand is that's the money sort of injected into the economy and some of the money created, and where that mostly comes from is loans. So when you get a loan, say for $500,000 for a house, basically, you know, at one time it was like, you know, they had to have something like, you know, 10% of that money on deposit or 20% of that money. And then they would now basically the banks don't need to have any of this money on deposit. They can just create the money out of thin air. Well, with the interest rates being high, because, you know, essentially the U.S. Treasury has to make the interest, they got to put the interest rates up so other countries will buy these Treasury bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody wants the Treasury bonds, really. I mean, anybody who's paying attention understands that the American empire is so ready to collapse.
Yeah, you know, so they don't even give you that much when you go to cash in your Treasury bonds compared to something
else. Wants to give the federal government, you know, their money for, you know, 20, 30, 10 years?
Sign me up.
When they can give some kind of exchange on the internet money for 6 months, 4 years, 5 years, a year. And it's risky. I actually have a friend who 3 years ago, he was like, oh, dude, you got to take your cryptocurrency and, you know, you got this money in crypto and you should put it in this thing. And I was like, yeah, I'm not doing any of that. I don't want to have to pay attention to that stuff. Yeah. You know, I'm kind of like, I'm just lazy when it comes to that kind of stuff. I got better things to do than like fool around with, you know,
trading and stuff like that.
I'm not into any of that.
Neither.
So like, I don't know, a year later, I'm like, hey, that pancake swap thing you were telling me, it was something called, I think is what it was called. He's like, huh, like, where are you at with that? You know, because he's like, oh, I'm putting like $5,000 in or something like that. You know, I can't remember the number. He says, he's like, oh, yeah. He's like, I missed pulling it out when it was at its highest. And like, but when he pulled it out on the way back down and he made like a couple $100, he didn't lose it. But he says, if I'd held it for a few more days, but this is a guy like, you know, every hour he's like looking at his phone at like what these things are doing, and he's all talking about it. And it just takes a lot of attention. Like, you got to pay attention to it. And he did lose some crypto in some of these, you know, financial schemes. And I know other people who have lost a lot. And I know some people who have made some like wicked money, in these things. So, but what I can tell it money velocity slowing down is it's because what creates money into existence is people getting loans.
Mm-hmm.
And that has really slowed down.
Wow.
And what's been happening for the last few years because of the artificially low interest rates, and I still think 8% is an artificially low interest rate. I mean, an interest rate should be, a real interest rate would be, there's no entity out there like the Federal Reserve or any of these central banks that create money out of thin air that can just come up with the money because of they push a button on a keyboard. That's all they literally do. Well, somebody has to sign a document for some man or woman in a form of a loan application. They create this money out of thin air, and then essentially that increases the credit limit of the bank. So I tell people all the time that are using legacy financial systems, every time you write a check, every time you deposit a check, every time you swipe a card, every time you apply for a loan, every time you make some kind of financial check transaction that has a digital part to it, whether you deposit cash or withdraw cash, you're essentially increasing the credit line of the United States Corporation, and the United States Corporation spends most of their money on killing people on the other side of the world.
And that's why if you use dollars, you're using blood money, and if you use cryptocurrency, you're promoting peace.
Or cryptocurrency, barter, silver barter bags, trading in, gold backs, but anything that's, regulated by the government and you need to have, know your customer, that's all blood money. That's all, going to further enslave and make the world worse.
I mean, I hate to break it to y'all, but Bitcoin has become, government blood money.
Probably.
I mean, they own more of it than anybody else.
I don't only talk about Bitcoin when I talk about cryptocurrency, for one thing. And for another thing, it's not like it's as bad as using the U.S. dollar.
Well, what's nice about cryptocurrency,
I would say it's just as bad, but
cryptocurrency,
it's not just as bad because you're 100% of the time funding wars and everything with the U.S. dollar.
Well, here's the thing: you can't create any more coins than the network allows, and then in 20 years or something, there will be no more bitcoins being minted, or it'll be like take forever to mint the last couple of bitcoin, to mine the last few bitcoins. So it's that programming, that network, and if that changes within the Bitcoin protocol, it would be aware to the people, paying attention to the, the nodes and the blockchain. I don't know how to do that. But so that's kind of like, and the fact that is, I guess if the,
I just, I'll make a point. It's like if you're using cash, dollar bills in hand, and That's not traceable. I mean, it was traced at one point, but now that it's in your hands, it's not traceable. Whereas, crypto, a lot of crypto, it's traceable. So it's like, I just look at, there's still a value over dollar cash, in the sense that crypto is still traceable. Do you get my point?
Yeah, but yep. It's just like you can do things like use these mixers and use Monero. It doesn't have to be traceable. And even if it is, that's not an immoral thing, like using the
dollar. Not saying it is. I'm just saying, I guess, yeah. No, I guess what I was getting at is because
the other thing is
the
not everything,
has a lot into it.
Everything you're doing, can you use cash to do? Like, sometimes you need to send money to someone across the other side of the world.
True.
So if I know people that are getting loans and having success for it, and there's like very little red tape, there's no like very little know your customer through these crypto things, and they're utilizing it and they're happy with the service, and they like the idea that they're giving interest to somebody on the other end who actually holds crypto, like an individual or many individuals, depending on where this comes from, and not to the evil banks who literally sponsor and create all the wars, because all wars are bankers' wars. The purpose and what of the U.S. military and what they've been doing my entire life is enforcing the use of the U.S. dollar as a world currency. The petrodollar is the only reason that we're bombing all these countries constantly and all the time is so they
it's backing the purchasing power.
And so now I can see why the Treasury is freaking out and all these guys are freaking out, because the fact that people just aren't borrowing money. People aren't getting loans. And the thing is, it's like, all these cars are like way overpriced. For example, I mean the pickup truck that I drive, which is 30 years old almost, is like 120 grand or 110 grand if you went and bought it right now, the same exact truck.
That doesn't make any
sense.
Is
it because people want to get older cars because they don't have
No. I'm just saying if you went and bought a 2024 F-350 diesel loaded, all the options, crew cab, four-wheel drive, pickup truck, it's like $114,000.
I expect it to be more money than an older vehicle. Makes sense. But like that much? It blows it up proportion. So, how much was your truck when it first came out? Maybe maybe 15,000, 20,000.
It was like $21,000.
Okay, yeah. Like, that's crazy that it's gone up a lot. Five times the amount.
And well, crazy. Well, it actually makes perfect sense. You know, with all the money that's being produced, with all the inflation. Now, if we took the truck, the value of a brand new truck, say for the past 50 years, and we compared it to like silver and gold. I mean, that would be an interesting thing. I have, it'd take me a few minutes to like calculate all those numbers, but, they're kind of like, right there, and sort of it. You could probably for this 1997, it'd probably take you could probably buy that truck, the same truck today with the same amount of gold it would take you to come up with it. So I don't know how much $20,000 of gold was in 1997, versus I'm doing the math on that, but. Anyways, and just things are getting expensive. So all you got to do is just make food and energy 10% more, and that's a whole lot less money that people have to do things. So we had all this $4 gas, $6 heating oil last winter in New Hampshire. That's crazy. Firewood, $500 a cord for firewood. But it takes a lot of work to make firewood and to season it. And,
The fuel was up. That's why, lumber costs and everything were up last year because of that. I remember.
Well, lumber costs were skyrocketed. So in 2019, lumber costs was way down. And magically, a whole bunch of lumber mills in like 2019 and early 2020, all their stock of lumber that was milled got burnt.
Whoa.
So hundreds of millions of board foot got burnt like within a 6 week period, or basically 2019.
I never heard of that one. Yeah. I heard of all the food companies getting burned.
There is a there was a documentary I had watched in 2019, and it was just released. And somehow we were looking at YouTube. It was before we had the kids. We had just moved to Henniker. And we were watching some YouTube stuff about Henniker, and we found this thing about lumber mill burnt in Henniker.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And there was 19 lumber mills that burnt basically in the United States and Canada. And when I say lumber mills, these things have
big
billions of board feet of lumber. Like, just as far as you can see, acres and acres of lumber stacked up 20 foot tall, all over the place. And they had nowhere to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
And lumber is a heck of a renewable resource. I've been growing up in the forests of New England, pretty much my entire life, and I watch lots of clear cut logging, and years later, bam, forests come right back. I've watched selective cut logging, and forest comes right back. And so there's all this stuff everywhere. So what happened is the lumber price crashed hard. It was like down to like $300 per like 1,000 board foot, and like a semi truck is like 5,000 to 6,000 board foot of lumber, depending on whether it's pine or oak or whatever. And then it went way up to like $14,
because of all the fires.
Well, with 2020, so you had the scamdemic, and everybody started working from home. So like all these guys are building decks and they're remodeling their house, and there's a whole bunch of incentive money came. So a whole bunch of people just like, bam, I'm going to do all these house things.
Less
like
people wanna
work. The Home Depot, money went up. The Lowe's money, all those guys are really down in the dumps right now. They're way down our revenues. Home Depot, Lowe's, the lumber prices have come way down. My local lumber yard. The prices are half of what they were, in the summer of 2020, because a lot of things are backing up because they've really sucked a lot out of the economy with
I remember prices going up, though.
Huh?
Prices on lumber went up.
They went up, and they've come back
down.
Really? Yep. Okay. They've come way back down. In 2019, I was buying 2x6s for $4.10 a piece, 8-foot 2x6s, because I needed a couple hundred of them for my house. I'm from the local lumber yard, and then they were at like $9.75 in like early 2021. I had to buy a few more. Then, I don't know, 4 or 5 days ago, I had to buy a couple of these 2x6s, and they were at like $5.10.
Wow.
They're not quite what they were in 2019, but they've come way down.
Wow. And I just think it's crazy because a lot of people just still don't want to work. Like, my sister got 3 jobs in less than a month when she first got here.
Yep.
Well, not all at once, but she got a job, and then she's like, I got offered this one, so bye. And then she got a third job. It's just so easy to get a job right now.
Yeah, if you have any ambition and you're not a drug addict, even if you are a drug addict and you have ambition,
you can function. Yeah, be the speed kind of drug addict, and maybe you can get a job.
But no, all you need is just to show up, have a pulse, You know, if you just look at a lot of the people working in convenience stores, you know, and some of the places I go into, I'm like, I'm just surprised that they'd even hire some of these guys, but they're just so desperate for help.
Yep. Well, swiveling back, pivoting back to this story of how the U.S. Treasury is seeking to name crypto mixers as a money laundering concern. I want to know exactly what that means. Like, is it just a thing they're going to say, or does it do anything to maybe criminalize these owners of these mixers, which has already been happening? Like, people have gone to jail.
Like, yeah, the U.S. Treasury should look into money laundering going on with Ukraine.
Oh, they don't care.
And now Israel, and you know the DEA, because you know they're pushing all the drugs into the country and into the cities, and all the banks that are laundering for the Mexican cartels and the Chinese cartels and the New Hampshire drug cartel.
That's just making the government get more money. They want to stop anything that could make you be independent of them. Like,
that's right.
It's all about power, not so much about the wealth. I think it's just about power.
That's the main thing. I always think the same thing.
They keep money from, you know, the people that are fighting for freedom, or people, the average person is the one fighting for freedom. What's going to prevent him or them from expanding?
Taxes, regulations.
And also, the average person doesn't have that much, like, ambition. Like, they just want to get by. They want to make enough money to do their little things that they like go to Starbucks, go to, you know, they think they're rich because they shop at Whole Foods. And
yes.
Yeah, but they don't care about who gets hurt when they're using their blood money or anything like that. And I know what you mean. The United States government doesn't care that you are, like, upper middle class. They're not. I'm always saying the same thing. There's more about power, but money does give you power. So if you're, like, really ambitious and you want to make a lot of money, you create this cryptocurrency mixer online, they're going to go after you.
Yeah.
It says the U.S. Department of Treasury's financial crimes arm, so FinCEN, is proposing to label crypto mixers as a primary money laundering concern in its effort to combat illicit crypto finance, highlighting the terrorist groups that have benefited from anonymous crypto funds, including possibly Hamas. The Treasury's Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, FinCEN, issued a notice of proposed rulemaking on Thursday, which they're not elected or anything like that, and they're making rules, and you could still get in trouble in court for breaking these rules, and that's ridiculous. It says on Thursday, which will be open to public comment for 90 days, not that they actually care what you said. Quote, today's action underscores Treasury's commitment to combating the exploitation of convertible virtual currency mixing by a broad range of illicit actors, including state-affiliated cyber actors, cyber criminals, and terrorist groups, unquote, said Deputy Secretary of the Treasury, Wally Ademo. That's interesting. Ademo. That's the last name. In a statement that cited the agency's past actions against Tornado Cash and Blender.io, those are the ones I was thinking of. Those are some mixers that people actually went to prison for creating.
Yeah, I heard that Tornado was used by North Korea. So they were saying that if you ever use Tornado on your crypto wallet, and then you try to go into an exchange with that crypto, they were denying you access because somehow it was traceable.
So North Korean money.
Yeah. A lot of people have that problem about
that is scary.
Trying to access their crypto or, you know, exchanging it.
I'm going to go to your phone calls and your thoughts, though. We have unscreened caller on the line. What's your name?
Hello, my name is Mark. I'm from Western Pennsylvania.
Oh, hey, Mark. What's on your mind?
Earlier, y'all were talking about Russia. Have you ever heard that Russia outlawed microwave ovens years ago? And is there any health benefits to that? Are they dangerous? Because I use them every day.
I've never heard that. Have you guys ever heard of that?
I mean, I know microwaves are bad if they're not trapped in the machine.
No, I mean about, have you ever heard of Russia outlawing them? I had never heard that. Oh, you have?
Yep. So there was a newspaper I used to read on Cape Cod. Cape Cod Chronicle, it was called. It was kind of like for like 55 and up crowd, senior newspaper. It was a free newspaper. But there was always a lot of stuff in there from Ron Paul and all kinds of things. And it was a really good article about how what microwaves. So microwave actually turns like water molecules,
mm-hmm.
and it vibrates them, you know, at this frequency 2.1, 1.9 gig or whatever, and basically it vibrates it, and those water molecules and those molecules get hot in friction because they move at such a low level. That's what heats them up. And a friend of mine actually just got an RF meter, and he threw the microwave out of the house, basically within about 15 feet of the microwave, it was basically leaking so much RF that it was at like a dangerous level. Radio frequency. So it measures all kinds of frequencies. This, mm-hmm. this RF thing. Like if you put it like basically within an inch of the phone, it's pretty active. But he runs like a whole bunch of servers. He's got all kinds of computers, and he's trying to like. You know, like set himself up so he's not nuking his body, you know, yeah. doing this stuff. So like all his servers are pretty, unless you're like not standing like right up against these computers and don't have your face right against these monitors and stuff, you know, it seems the RF isn't bad, but the microwave.
Basically, when you feel heat coming off of it.
The microwave scared him. It was so like high. So yeah, so what happens is the microwave actually voids whatever you put in it of nutrition. So like I didn't have a microwave. From the time I was about 24, 25 years old, in my house. In fact, I had a roommate that brought a microwave into my house and moved in. And then I was like, no, you got to get rid of this thing. And I'm like, well, then you just move out. No microwave. You have to have a microwave. Don't live here.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do have a microwave in our house. It's not in our kitchen. And the only thing we use it for, my wife will use it for, is heating up a heat pack. So it might turn on like a couple of times in the wintertime. And in fact, we got these new heat packs that we don't have any. I don't think we've used the microwave actually in a year. In fact, I suggested to her after my friend reminded me about how horrible they are because he got the RF meter of just getting rid of it. But it basically hasn't been plugged in, you know, in almost a year. But that microwaved food is void of nutrition. And I will tell you, almost every restaurant microwaves the food a little bit before they bring it to you because, you know, when they're preparing it, I don't know, like, I've never worked in a commercial kitchen, that kind of commercial kitchen, but fast food, but basically a lot of people I've talked to who worked in fast food says that a lot of stuff is just put in a microwave, get up temperature before it's brought out.
You go to Applebee's, you'll hear them talk amongst themselves, and they'll hear a number, they're like, 42, yeah, 42, and that's the number of seconds it takes to put that meal in the microwave.
603-283-6160, more coming up on Free Talk Live, don't go anywhere.
This is an urgent warning. America is heading for another major financial disaster at an alarming rate. We could see stock prices fall as much as 50%, but this time the crash could be more violent and come faster than you ever imagined. We are Advantage Gold, America's most trusted precious metals company, and we are here to sound the alarm that winter is coming for investors. And now is the time to take actions that may help protect and secure your portfolio with physical precious metals. Want to help protect your hard-earned money before it's too late? Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000 and request our free gold and silver survival kit today. Mention that you heard us on the radio and learn how you could get up to $1,000 in free silver coins. The number is 800-900-8000. Call now to get your free survival kit and see if you qualify for $1,000 in free silver today.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Check with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
As Dr. Wallach says, we all have nutrient deficiencies in our diets and must supplement with 90 essential nutrients in proper balances. At no cost or obligation, get a personal certified holistic health coach to help you develop a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
Anytime, any place, anywhere, radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.